Welcome to Keeping It Marian. I'm Father Thaddeus.
I'm Father Timothy.
We are two Marian priests, and together we join Mary in keeping the Word of God and the events of our daily lives, pondering them in our hearts. Today, we're going to keep it Marian by advancing to chapter 7 of the book of Tobit, but I can't help but go back about 3 minutes in time and think about the fact that I just took some fish supplements. I had to mention it. Tim was making a joke about the fact that I was taking fish oil and how helpful it probably would have been for Tobit and others, since Tobias had to get a huge Wells catfish and get the gall, liver, and heart. I think it's a bit more appealing just to have pills that you can take than having to excise.
And they look kind of nice. Looks like you have little capsules of honey.
Yes, basically. But it's probably from similar parts of the fish. So,
sure.
You know, a bit more.
No CVS back in the days of Tobit. Sorry, Tobit. Or Tobias.
That was just a stroke of divine providence. I didn't put two and two together until I thought of taking fish oil. And that's literally basically what Tobias has got to apply to his father's eyes in order to heal him from the blindness.
Well, maybe instead of taking them orally, you should just smear it on your eyeballs.
Well, I'm not blind, though.
Well, maybe it'll give you better vision.
It is interesting, though, that ancient medicine talks about the benefits of fish and its organs, and here we are today.
That's right.
With companies vying for the same thing of, organs and oil and health benefits. So here we are, chapter 7. Tobias has arrived at the house of Raguel in Media, if I remember. No, Ecbatana. That was the trip. Oh, the names always get me confused. When I was in Argentina, Brother Patrick adopted a cat. I'm pretty sure you've seen this cat in the photos.
Yes, I've seen the cat.
And fondly has now named this cat, no longer a kitten, Raguel. So now this story is kind of ruined, because whenever I hear Raguel, I'm thinking about an orange cat down in South America, who's a lovely cat.
Yeah.
But anyway. Okay, so here we are. I'm going to go ahead and read. I may read a little bit quickly, presuming that most of y'all have the Bibles with you as well. Again, I'm using the NABRE. Depending on the translation, you may have more or less. So again, just that caveat. And feel free to stop me, interrupt me when you got a point to make. When they entered Ecbatana, there they are. So when they entered Ecbatana, Tobias said, "Brother Azariah, lead me straight to our kinsman Raguel." So he brought him to the house of Raguel, where they found whom they found seated by his courtyard gate. So here we have, after the conversation between Tobiah and Raphael or Azariah about the demon and about the seven men who failed as they try to approach Sarah for their first night and have relations with her. Now we have Tobiah completely decided.
Yeah.
So the last verse of chapter 6, he was already falling in love with her, even at a distance. And basically, he's like, let's go straight to the point. Let's not beat around the bush. I don't want to waste more time. So it's part of his maturation process. He's got his goal, and he's aiming straight at it. So, continuing. They greeted him first. He said to them, "Greetings to you too, brothers. Good health to you and welcome." When he brought them into his home, he said to his wife, Edna, "This young man looks just like my kinsman, Tobit." Pause there for a moment. So sometimes you have translations that say Anna, which is a Greek kind of corruption of the word here. Edna comes from the same Hebrew word, which would mean pleasure, where we get the word for Eden, the Garden of Eden. So it's a not so common name for Israelites, because remember, they're not Jews.
Yeah.
So we'll read in a moment. They're from the tribe of Naphtali. But just an interesting little note. And here we have this long exchange of greetings, which for us can seem just, I mean, everybody's just saying, hey, how are you? But again, this commentator is a great commentator. He points out, it is nonetheless part and parcel of human life to be able to greet people well, especially your own kinsfolk, your own family.
Sure.
And it's not always easy. You know, we have jokes about the in-laws and people in the family that may not be too happy to see. But a large part of this book is dedicated to the bonds of blood that we have and the duties that we have towards them, which first and foremost is to desire good things for them. When Jesus talks about loving your enemies, I think you said, C.S. Lewis once said, sometimes our
as Chesterton, that oftentimes our enemies and our neighbors are the same person.
Yes.
That's why we're commanded to love both.
Yes. And Jesus followed the command of loving neighbor, I think, with a – or no, after he talked about loving enemies, that's when he talked about love your neighbor as yourself. So, you know, these simple greetings that, you know, we could say, oh, there's just nice, you know, superficialities, you know, small talk. But there's a real truth to that as well in terms of, do we desire good health to others? Do we desire all that that brings? And Hebrews would be shalom. So, I mean, the desire for all blessings to be upon the person that he's greeting. And the irony is, man looks just like my kinsman Tobit. Well, that's because that is his son. But we know from the story, so Raguel must have known Tobit 30 years before. So this is before Tobias was alive.
Yeah.
So Edna asked them, "Who are you, brothers?" They answered, "We are of the exiles from Naphtali at Nineveh." She said, "Do you know our kinsman Tobit?" Here we go again. They answered, "Indeed we do." She asked, "Is he well?" They answered, "Yes, he is alive and well." Then Tobiah exclaimed, "He is my father." There we go. Raguel sprang up and kissed him, shedding tears of joy. But when he heard that Tobit had lost his eyesight, he was grieved and wept aloud. He said to Tobiah, "My child, God bless you. You are the son of a noble and good father. But what a terrible misfortune that such a righteous and charitable man should be afflicted with blindness." He continued to weep in the arms of his kinsman Tobiah. His wife Edna also wept for Tobit, and even their daughter Sarah began to weep. A lot of emotions flowing around there.
Sure.
There's surprise, you know, so they don't know that this is Tobiah, the son of Tobit. And originally the good news that, yes, he's well, alive and well, which in just a moment we find out, well, not that well.
Yeah.
And then everybody turns into tears. So you have Edna, the wife, Sarah, the daughter, and Raguel all weeping. And it shows, at least for me, the genuine love and compassion.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, at least in certain parts of the U.S. that have more kind of British roots, forgive my critique here, but, you know, kind of a bit more Victorian style of not showing emotions, let's say, and being a bit colder. But we have here really a display of affectivity, you know, that human bonds and families know this, you know, there are great highs of family life, everybody's happy, and great lows, everybody's frustrated or angry. We have here kind of a piece of family life at its best, where love is expressed through a warm greeting and desiring the best for somebody. And then love also expressed through real sorrow and compassion. And I think that's just notable because in a world where we're inundated with news, media, Twitter, and other places where you just hear bad event after bad event. And Pope Francis, I think, made a good point some years ago in his letter for Lent about indifference in the world. You know, you can hear about, you know, earthquake in Timbuktu and so many people died. And understandably, after a while, we're kind of like, okay, that's tragic, but, you know, move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Because we can only take so much.
That's right.
Tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah, you do become, in a sense, desensitized to it. But then sometimes when you think that, you know, I guess I'll never be sad or emotional again, something happens, you know, and then this is waterworks, you know, it just certain things hit like a nerve on us. And in that time, it's time to cry, I suppose.
Right. And that's something Deacon Ray, my spiritual father, I've talked about before. I mean, he's a man who originally was not very emotional, but now when people come to him, you know, seeking deliverance and he helps with the exorcism ministry, he's a man that cries. He cries with the people who suffer. And it's notable.
Yeah.
That kind of compassion moves people's hearts. I think even of St. John Vianney, that there were certain people who confessed to him, not quite repentant. And there's the one story of John Vianney weeping and the man asking, "Why are you weeping?"
Yeah.
"I'm weeping over your sentence." And then the penitent began to weep as well.
Right.
There's a real power to tears. And I mention that because in U.S. culture at times, there's this kind of stigma. I don't want other people to see that I'm weeping, or I don't want other people to see that I got, you know, tears on my face. And I think from my spiritual father, I've learned that there's nothing to hide about that. It is a real part of the human heart, and something's lacking when tears and pain aren't part of also what we can share together.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the things I learned as I was writing one of my books was that complain in Latin literally means cum plangere, to cry with somebody.
Mm.
And I think about that because there are often complaints about complaining.
Sure, sure.
You know, like, oh, I don't want to hear complaints. But
yeah,
when I read that, I thought, well, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
How true that is, that I think people who do complain, you know, kind of the negative complainers, let's say, what are they ultimately looking for? They're saying, I'm sorrowful. Like, life is really painful. Is someone, like, attentive enough to me?
Does anybody even care?
Right.
You know, maybe you can't sympathize or empathize, but do you even care that I'm...
Right. And tears are pretty much irrefutable. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, at a distance as a therapist, to kind of say, oh, yes, you know, that's painful and that's difficult. It's another thing when someone, like Christ on the cross, you know, he really enters into our suffering.
Yeah.
Our pathos. Shall we proceed?
Yes, let's.
So verse 9. Afterward, Raguel slaughtered a ram from the flock and gave them a cordial reception. Imagine that when you arrive at someone's home. They actually slaughter the animal right there for your meal. When they had bathed and reclined to eat, Tobiah said to Raphael, Brother Azariah, ask Raguel to let me marry my kinswoman Sarah. So again, here he goes. He's not even interested in the food. He gets to the city, takes me straight to their home. He's about to have, you know, fresh meat slaughtered and cooked. And he said, I'm interested in marriage. Raguel overheard the words, so he said to the boy, eat and drink and be merry tonight, for no man is more entitled to marry my daughter Sarah than you, brother. Besides, not even I have the right to give her to anyone but you, because you are my closest relative. But I will explain the situation to you very frankly. I've given her in marriage to 7 men, all of whom are kinsmen of ours, and all died on the very night they approached her. But now, son, eat and drink. I am sure the Lord will look after you both. Tobiah answered, I will eat and drink nothing until you set aside what belongs to me. So we have here a certain almost stubbornness,
sure, you know,
of Tobiah. He is dogged about his goal here for Sarah, which I think speaks to his real love for her.
Yeah.
It is in the way I would read it.
Well, I think, too, he's he's also seeking something, much higher than, you know, refreshment from the journey, you know,
right,
and food and everything. One way to read it, perhaps, is that he doesn't want to be distracted from his, so to speak, goal, you know, which is to wed this woman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think there's lots of different ways in which, you know, it can be read. But, yeah, his directness is kind of funny. There's a kind of humor there, but also a very much a beauty to it, I guess, you know, something to just really see, like there is nothing else for him right now.
Right.
You know, it is this union that he seeks.
Right. And it reminds me of my high school professor. She explained how, as she was in the months before her wedding, getting thinner and thinner, and not because she was trying to fit into a nice wedding dress, but because she was so excited to be married and so in love that she simply was not concerned about eating and, in fact, forgot at various moments to pay attention to eating. And I think of that in this context, you know, this kind of focus is elsewhere rather than upon himself, you know, and just feasting. Now, Raguel's thinking more practically that, you know, listen, there's no need to rush, basically. Like, she's yours anyway, so you don't need to rush this process. And of course, we learn his own reticence because, well, you know, these 7 men,
right,
as they approach her, which is a euphemism for when they are about to have intercourse with her, you know, so it's kind of an embarrassing conversation, let's say, not very easy to bring up, but Tamiya is pretty insistent
here. Yeah. And he's also, you know, as we established in the last chapter, he's aware of this predicament that she's in. And, you know, it also seems fair to me that not only is he seeking, you know, to have her as his wife, but also to bring healing. Because, you know, Azariah is like, you know, Raphael is like, hey, you know, there's something we can do about this.
Yeah.
We can remedy this. And so I think there's also a real desire and zeal that, you know, this woman has suffered long enough. Let me, you know, not just take her, but that in the process of this wedding, of this marriage, rather, that her healing will come about that she's waited for so long for.
I just, again, I sing in various ways, but just kind of the selflessness almost, because he's so focused on the healing and the marriage. And I think even kind of like the Lord and the gospel in terms of his fasting, you know, like Tobiah here at the end of this verse 11 says, you know, I will eat or drink nothing until you set aside what belongs to me. I mean, his determination that his first priority is, you know, is Sarah, his love for her, which is true for the Lord, you know, that he places his bride, the church, before his own bodily needs, even his very life, you know, up to the cross. So it's somewhat, I guess my point with is somewhat of a prefigurement of that radical love that Christ has for his bride,
right,
for the church. Raguel said to him, to Tobiah, I will do it. She is yours according to the decree of the book of Moses. Your marriage to her has been decided in heaven. Take her, kinswoman. From now on, you are her love, and she is your beloved. She is yours today and ever after. Tonight, son, may the Lord of heaven prosper you both. May he grant you mercy and peace. I commented in our last episode how, you know, marriage is not just a happen chance of falling in love between two kind of random people, but here we have hints about divine providence. They don't use that word in this time in the Bible. But nonetheless, this idea here, your marriage to her has been decided in heaven. So it's not only human decision and human desire, kind of like John in his prologue, he says, you know, who become children of God, not by human decision or human desire, you know, but by God's will. And same thing here, that of course there are human decisions entering into this, but above all of the human interactions, you know, there's a divine plan that they're cooperating with, even if they're not even consciously doing so.
Yeah.
You are her love and she is your beloved. You know, such intimate names here, very beautiful. And I think relates to the intimacy of marriage, you know, that the heart of marriage, as those who are married can attest, but the church teaches too, is not just living together, not just the practical stuff, but is that love, you know, between Christ and the church that is made present between them. And then there are several comments here and then further down that point out, you know, how marriage is indissoluble. Again, that's a word we would use today. It's a big word from Latin, not able to be dissolved or like salt and water.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's yours today and ever after points, you know, especially in the Old Testament, where there was divorce permitted.
Yeah.
This is a definite push towards what Jesus teaches in the New Testament.
Right.
Like, no, marriage is for life and no ifs, ands, or buts, you know. Even with an understanding of what annulments are, nonetheless, marriage in an authentic sense is always for life. And the invocation of God for protection, mercy, and peace, which, you know, in today's age, I think is so important when so many marriages do break apart and so many people won't even get married, because there is a lot of human brokenness. And we do need God's protection when we love another person.
Yeah.
I remember speaking with Deacon Ray about vocations at one point, and he surprised me. He said, you know, to discern marriage, he said, I'd basically make you discern for 3 years. And I thought, oh, that's a long time. He said, because, you know, committing to loving another person with all their sinfulness and all their brokenness is no small thing. It definitely requires God's grace in his vocations, not just a, oh, yeah, you know, we're in love and sounds good. And, you know, let's do this. Verse 12, then Raguel called his daughter Sarah. She came to him. He took her by the hand and gave her to Tobiah with the words, take her according to the law. According to the decree written in the book of Moses, she is your wife. Take her and bring her back safely to your father. And may the God of heaven grant both of you peace and prosperity. So another repetition of his prayer for them. He then called her mother and told her to bring a scroll so that he might draw up a marriage contract stating that he gave Sarah to Tobiah as his wife according to the decree of the Mosaic law. Her mother brought the scroll and he drew up the contract to which they affixed their seals. So here we have, even from ancient times, the legal stuff.
Yeah. You know,
people today often, not often, but some people can kind of reduce marriage to just the legalities. Like, oh, what does it matter? You know, it only matters the love that's between us and, you know, they live together without anything legal. But there is, you know, Moses' law, there's Christ's law that enters it into even that most intimate of relationships. I think that's a good foundation to build on, because no matter how strong the feelings of love are in a particular moment, They're never strong enough to persevere on their own through thick and thin. You know, we all stand before the Lord in need of grace, you know, in his law. Afterward, they began to eat and drink. So finally, now they're, you know, actually able to celebrate. And what was originally just a festive dinner to accept guests now becomes a wedding dinner. Later, Raguel called his wife Edna and said, "My love, prepare the other bedroom and bring the girl there." She went and made the bed in the room as she was told and brought the girl there. After she had cried over her, she wiped away the tears and said, "Be brave, my daughter. May the Lord of heaven grant you joy in place of your grief. Courage, my daughter." Then she left. So apparently it was part of the customs of that time that the mom was the one who would prepare that room. The room, obviously, for the first night of bride and bridegroom together. For us, it may seem a bit quick. Have only
sure
an hour perhaps of knowing each other,
but
it's, you know, of its time in this regard, that is largely decided by law and, you know, relationships than by just romantic love and by length of time spent together. But I think here is beautiful to see again the deep love and the affectivity present. So the mother weeps over Sarah, and perhaps because she's afraid of something happening again.
Sure.
But also because...
Well, even to take courage. I mean, you know, obviously, it seems obvious to me that with all the suitors that haven't worked out, that the mother and father, they must have had some sort of conversations, you know, and she does her best to explain what's going on, you know, kind of thing. That, and so it's a very tough situation, you know, that, so yeah, with the whole take courage, you know, I mean, it's not just like take courage for marriage, but, you know, like it's you know, it's take courage with keeping your hope in God that he will see this unfortunate situation, this painful situation, to a good conclusion. So it's all a whole bunch of range of emotions. There's all kinds of things going on in this particular instance here. I mean, I do love how really for Sarah's family as well as Tobias's family, like, you know, all of them are really doing their best to encourage one another. They're not perfect. You know, they make their mistakes here and there, but they really are striving, you know, to be brave and to do the will of the Lord. And that's, again, is something perhaps kind of rare, you know, when families together today are trying to strive to do the will of the Lord in such unison. You know, you might have the mother that's like really intent on doing it, or the father, or maybe the children and not the parents, you know, but... In both of these cases, you know, everyone really truly is trying to avail themselves to the will of God.
Yeah, and that's one of the things in this commentary that the author points out, that you have here the main characters with various good attributes. So you have, you know, Tobiah, who's very decided and intent upon doing God's will, even in the face of dangers. You have, you know, Raguel, who's just, who's sincere, you know, but also very kind. You have Sarah, who's obedient, you know, who fulfills the will of her parents, but also of the law. But it also seems that she voluntarily is doing this. You know, she's voluntarily going to Tobias. She doesn't have an objection. And Edna, who's, you know, very much a caring and careful mother here. And overall, I think it paints a realistic image of a family life. I think each family kind of has those moments of embarrassment. I can only imagine, you know, Raguel and Edna, in one sense, being happy, like,
yeah,
wonderful. You know, we have a man who might actually be able to marry our daughter and bring us out of this situation. But then there's that kind of hemming and hawing of like, it's great.
Yeah.
But we also are afraid of, well, if we actually try this again, is it actually going to work? And so it's kind of that catch-22 situation where you want something to shift, but you're afraid to actually try because you don't want it to fail again.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine for each family, they're kind of topics like this that you're not quite comfortable with and you kind of want to hide, but it comes out and you're not sure how to discuss it.
Yep.
I mean, in my own family, part of that was that I found out later, you know, my mom was married to a different man originally and my dad was married to a different woman originally. And my oldest siblings are not from the same father, which isn't a big deal to me, but it became kind of a similar situation. I mean, no demons involved, but just that, you know, the situation of like, you don't talk about that. Like that, that's the family embarrassment.
Right.
And I think this is what this depicts, is each family kind of has those family embarrassments that you kind of want to hide away and kind of pretend that aren't there. And what's beautiful to me about God's providence is God goes straight for the jugular. He's saying like, oh, that thing that's causing you the embarrassment, that's what I want to heal. And our human reaction of like, that's great, but I'm not quite sure if I'm ready to trust that it's actually going to work this time. But I think, again, the beauty of how God sees the shame of the family, sees what they want to hide, and says, oh, this, you know, I see it, and I want to enter in, and I want to bring healing. You know, the big name of the book, Raphael, you know, God. God is medicine, God heals. There's one other thing, but if you have a thought, go ahead.
No, other than the fact that we kind of breezed right through that chapter, and I think we could just go right into the next chapter, because that's where all the fun stuff starts. And we've got the big prayer, you know, and we're right there. Why stop?
Well,
take courage.
I guess. I think that's a lot to,
Let's see what happens.
All right. I didn't prepare for it.
That's all right. It's depend on the Holy Spirit.
Go ahead. Why don't you read then?
Sure. Well, after this happens, and of course, we go into chapter 6, which is titled, of course, not the official text. I'm sorry, chapter 8.
Yeah.
Which is titled The Expulsion of the Demon. You know, but that's not the part of the actual, you know, scriptures. That's just, you know, I just like that little heading there. So they finished their meal, and then they brought Tobias and led him up to the bedroom. And Tobiah is mindful of Raphael's instructions.
Well, that was a pretty quick chapter.
Very quick.
I only want to comment about one last thing, because I think it summarizes part of the whole irony here of the book, is when when Raguel responds to Tobiah. This is back in verse 7. It says, "You are the son of a noble and good father." Now, that's a very Greek phrase behind that, a very common way of describing people, noble and good. But Tobit's name means goodness. And of course, the irony being here, he says next, a terrible misfortune has overcome him. And I think that's a good description for a lot of our lives, is, you know, we're created by God's goodness and to enjoy his goodness. And in the midst of it, like Job, we have all these terrible misfortunes that are going on, and we're trying to kind of figure out, like, wait, what?
Yeah, why?
How? And I think that kind of play on words behind there describes much of this chapter about, it's a good thing that Tobiah and Azariah have arrived, that he wants to marry, but then we got this embarrassment that we kind of want to hide, that we hope that Tobiah survives the first night, and Sarah as well. I think it's true for all of our lives. And why I think it's such a great book, because so many families, I think, struggle with this.
Sure.
And not struggle just because, well, they're morally in a weak place, but it's just the broken world that we live in, where, yeah, we want to experience God's goodness, and calamity after calamity can befall us, and we, like the actors in this book, and go, but Lord, where is your goodness? How do we arrive at a life that truly is blessed? And that's where the next chapter, which, you know, I'm ready to get into when we get to the next episode, because it's kind of the meat of everything here, the expulsion of the demon, and the prayer of Tobiah and Sarah together, which is often, I think, what's read at marriages, together with the following chapters. So anything you want to add before we conclude? Well, you get a break today. It's a little bit shorter. Yeah. You don't have to put up with us for too much longer today, but thanks for joining. I look forward to continuing this book with you. We're inching towards the end. So, as always, we ask you to pray for us. Pray to St. Raphael in a particular way for us. We assure you of our own prayers. I'm Father Thaddeus.
And I'm Father Timothy.
God bless. Immaculata Virginis Maria Concepcio.
Sit nobis salus et protectio.
May the Virgin Mary's Immaculate Conception
be our health and our protection.
Are you enjoying this podcast? I invite you to watch it as well. You can find the video version of Keeping It Marian exclusively on DivineMercyPlus.org, the streaming site for all things Marian. Join us daily for enriching spiritual content which will help you on your journey with Jesus Christ. Simply visit DivineMercyPlus.org for a complete list of our shows. That's DivineMercyPlus.org. Please follow or subscribe to this podcast to receive the latest episodes and updates. If you have been blessed by this podcast, I invite you to leave a review. Reviews greatly improve our podcast ranking and will help spread this podcast to other people throughout the world. Are you a Marian helper? Join our Spiritual Benefit Society and start sharing in the graces of all the daily masses, prayers, and good works of Marian priests and brothers all over the world. Sign up is free and easy. Simply visit micprayers.org. That's micprayers.org. Thank you, and God bless you. Visit shopmercy.org to order your copy of my new book, Shining in Spotless Splendor, Consecration to the Immaculate Conception. Again, this book is available on shopmercy.org. God bless you.